Who is the Jack in a pack of cards?
Who's the Simon in Simon Says?
And which name came first, Cluedo or Clue?
Let's check into Checkers and Scrabble around in Scrabble on another episode of Words Unraveled.
Welcome to another episode of Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Zafaris, author of the etymology books Once Upon a Word and Words from Hell. And today we are gamifying Words Unraveled. So draw your hopscotch, build your board. You certainly won't be bored in this delightful episode.
Yes, everyone's a winner in this fun and games episode of Words Unraveled with we two losers.
Little friendly competition between etymology nerds.
Oh yeah, because I know that we've got we've researched some of the same subjects for this one, so maybe we are going to battle it out a little bit on a few of these. But let's begin, Jess, with the word game. It's always good to start with the theme, isn't it? What's the etymology of the word game?
So this is a super versatile word. Like it's basically a word for fun, and it dates back to Old English. It has cognates in across Germanic languages. All of them mean like joy or glee or fun or amusement. When Shakespeare, this is not Old English, obviously, but when Shakespeare writes in Love's Labour's Lost, we have pastimes here and pleasant game. He did not mean game as in hunted meat or a specific game, but general fun. But at the same time, it was also a word for games as we know them now, like chess and gambling and sports, and specifically for hunting and hawking and the joy of chase, but particularly out of necessity. Like if you were hunting for food, this was not a game. This was not a game. It was if you had the wealth to have fun while hunting.
Oh, okay. So it's only game if it's a sport.
Right. If you're out and having a great time while hunting, I suppose you could also be having a great time subsistence hunting, but it seems like the stakes are much higher in that case. And this could be like, you know, chasing animals, not necessarily eating them. It was also, interestingly, the word game was also a euphemism for sex for much of its history. A lady of the game was a euphemism for a sex worker, and the Middle English morality play The World and the Child includes the line, "I am a child gotten in game and great sin."
Right, that's why you sometimes still hear the phrase "on the game," I guess, although increasingly less often these days, probably for the best.
And then we also have the phrase like to have game or to be game for something. That's also quite old. It's like to have the mettle or fighting spirit to do some kind of competition or game or have fun. And this was apparently a comparison to a gamecock, like a fighting rooster.
Right. So to describe someone as game is essentially to describe them as fun. Fascinating. Well, let's have a bit of fun with some card games, perhaps, because I've been looking into card games. I'm not a huge player of card games, but I did used to play them with my grandma. I think I know the names of a few of them that we could maybe go into.
Certainly. I brought some gambling and card-related origins.
Okay. Well, where should we start?
Well, I will note that the word gamble is related to the word game. And of course, not all card games are gambling games, but many card games can be used for gambling, and many people go gambling in order to play card games.
But it's not the same as the word to gamble, which is to, you know, hop around
different
like a little
word.
Deer or something.
Oh, are they related? I want to find out. Let's see.
Okay, that's worth a look, isn't it?
Apparently not. No, apparently gambling is from like a horse's leg, though it was a word for skipping or leaping. So I wonder if there's some like cross-pollination across meaning there.
Yeah, well, who knows?
Basically, it's a frequentive. That L-E or E-L ending, as was the case in Old English, is frequentive. So if you see that, then it's probably like a repetitive thing that you're doing. So you're doing an activity. You are at the activity of gaming.
The card game that people perhaps most accustomed to or aware of is probably poker, right? I feel like poker is like the big daddy of the games, the card games these days.
And does it have a lot to do with physical poking?
Well, no, it doesn't. It comes from the French verb poc, which means, it means to knock. It's come from a German word pochen, which actually, that means to knock nowadays, but it has this older meaning, which is to brag, which is very interesting because an old version of poker, quite popular in Britain, was just called brag. And obviously the bragging, I suppose, is, Yeah, the bluffing that is required when playing a game of poker, the giving the impression you've got a better hand than you actually have.
Ooh, I kind of like that. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And
So a little less, I wonder what the knocking implication connection there is. So, you know, less pointy, more knuckly.
Yeah, well, I think it's more that the word pochen has come to mean knock now, but it had this older meaning of brag, and it's related to that older meaning rather than what it tends to mean now.
I see that. That makes sense. So you have to have this, like, you know, you have to be able to brag like you have this cold stone expression while you convince everyone you've got a royal flush.
So that's poker. It does come from German, but via French to us. Let's talk about another one, solitaire.
That one's a nice one. You can play it by yourself. It's the introvert's card game, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, solitaire does mean, like, solitary, essentially. But one of the interesting things about this is it also originally included sort of an affiliation with widows. Solitaire was also a word for a widow or a person who was said to live in solitude or be a recluse. I feel like there's this recurring suggestion that widows or women who are not married just, like, sit alone and are sad all the time.
Yeah, but is there maybe some cultural grounding in that?
Oh, I'm sure.
A woman in that position actually wouldn't be in a position to do a heck of a lot more than that, particularly when there were times, you know, only a few centuries ago when women weren't allowed to be out of the house unmarried.
Indeed.
Unmarried, unaccompanied.
I always figure they have a lot more fun than public sentiment gave them credit for.
One hopes so. They certainly do now, anyway. Oh, so, yeah, that's from French. So solitaire is just the French word for solitary. Do you know another one that surprised me that is from French? Although I'm interested to know if you even know this name, because this game has a much more popular name. Well, actually, two other names that are much more popular. It's pontoon.
No, I don't know pontoon.
So pontoon is, to my mind, from my experience of playing it, very similar to blackjack or 21. It's a game where you try to get to as close to 21 by combining your cards' values together without going over it. But the game that I used to play with my grandma was called pontoon. And we know what a pontoon is, right? It's like a sort of bridgey thing.
Floaty thing on a boat?
Yeah. It's a thing that floats. It floats on the water. But actually, the name of the game has nothing to do with what a pontoon is. It's actually just an atrocious anglicization of the French for 21.
Oh, which is 21.
21 or 21, you can say, if it's feminine. So, and this is a bit of a theme with some of these card game names. They are bad attempts at trying to say foreign words.
Yeah, I've got a couple of these. Before we move on from blackjack, the name blackjack is apparently an American invention. Apparently casinos in the 19th century introduced a special payout for a hand that contained an ace of spades and a blackjack, either the jack of spades or the jack of clubs, and the name kind of stuck.
Right, and that name replaced 21, which is just the English version of the French 21. Isn't it nice how these things sometimes just come together?
Another one with a sort of French twisty name is, are you familiar with Pinochle?
No, that's a new one to me.
Okay, so I didn't know this either, but somebody said it to me the other day as if I should know, and they were Midwestern, so I wonder if maybe it is just more popular in the Midwest. It comes from the French word binocle, for eyeglasses or binoculars, thanks to a combination of cards that are, like, paired or matched in the game. It was also called weird, like, there were other weirder variations like peak knuckle and things like that.
Can you tell me anything about that game at all? I mean, I've never heard of it.
You do combinations of cards and strategic bidding. So it's luck and skill based. I say this having never played it before. So somebody in the comments is going to be like, no, absolutely not. It is not that.
Let's stick with this theme of the ones where it's just a foreign name that's gone wrong. Bridge is thought to be another one.
Ooh,
that's
yeah.
Thought to be from the Russian birich, which sometimes gets called Russian rummy. What birich actually means in Russian isn't all of that clear. There is a Russian word meaning herald, to herald, which is birich, but it's not really clear why that would be linked with a card game. But I do like one of the other theories, which is that it comes from Ottoman Turkish. And the Ottoman Turkish for one is bir, and for three is üç. So it means 1-3. And apparently that is some way significant to the game. I don't know. I don't play it.
I mean, it does sound like bridge.
Yeah, well, that's the main thing, that bridge sounds like bridge, yeah.
Another one that's, I guess it's not that different from the word it's supposedly from, but the word rummy is supposedly, well, okay, there are a couple of theories. One of is that it's kind of like the term whiskey poker, which is just when an extra hand is dealt and can be taken by the first player who discards their hand face. I'm not going to try to explain this any further. Whoever knows how to play whiskey poker will know what I'm talking about. Apparently, another theory is that it's from German terms used in card games, meaning like glory or fame, which kind of makes sense with other card related games like trump cards and things like that.
I couldn't get to the origin of where rummy came from either, but there is a Spanish game based on it that in English is called Cuncan. And that, once again, is a terrible English attempt at a foreign phrase because it's the Spanish con quien, which means with whom. It comes out as concoon. I don't know. I just imagine these bawdy folks sitting around a gaming table just coming up with these dreadful translations.
Well, I mean, it's kind of neat because games can be, like a lot of these card games in particular, can be played across so many cultures and languages. So like, I imagine as trade was becoming, global trade was coming into its own, a lot of these people were sharing ways to pass time, of course.
Yeah. Whist is another one. I don't know if you've heard of whist. I think, I can't remember earlier if I said that bridge was described as Russian whist or I misspoke, but anyway. It was known as Russian whist. And whist is an interesting word in itself. So I found in a 1680 quote, this description, whist is called whist from the silence that is to be observed in the play. So there's this old word, whist, that means to be quiet or to be silent. And I think I know where you're going to go, Jess.
Like wistfulness.
Exactly, yes. And our modern concept of wistfulness appears to be us combining this old word whist with the idea of wishfulness, which is what makes it just a bit more ponderous than just sitting there in silence.
That's kind of beautiful.
Yeah, I think so. Wistful. And you can also be wistless, I suppose.
So interesting. Let's see. What other games do you have?
Well, you talked about games that are played across cultures. We really ought to talk about chess.
Absolutely. Okay. I have a lot on chess, as a matter of fact. It's such an interesting one.
It's an etymological goldmine. So
it is.
Let's start off with where the name comes from then, I guess.
Well, okay, so I like to start this discussion off with the fact that every single variation of the word check comes from the game of chess.
What?
Yes.
You mean to check to check something?
Checking anything. Writing a check, checking a box, all of it is from the game of chess. And I'm happy to explain how.
Yeah, okay, definitely do.
Okay, so I first found out about this when I was looking into, oddly, the word matador, which means killer. It's ultimately likely from the Latin mactare, meaning to kill, it could also be related to the Arabic mata, meaning he died, which also appears in the phrase shamat, the king died, which is the source of the word checkmate. Some folk etymology adaptations to English led us from shamat to checkmate. The journey here is shamat came into Arabic from Persian with a twist. In Persian, mat meant to be astonished and mata meant to die. But mat could be a declined form of mata, meaning he died. So in Persian, shamat meant the king is astonished or left helpless or stumped. As you can see, like in the game at the end, he's not necessarily in the original version of the game being killed, he's being like boxed in or can it prevented from moving. Literally, like the king can't even.
To rush to the defense of English speakers everywhere and our atrocious folk etymological interpretation of shamat as checkmate, all of the Romance languages have got a bizarre interpretation of that phrase just based upon how it sounds. I think like the closest is the French, which is échec et mat. And the mat there is the mat you're talking about at the start of matador, right? Which is to defeat or to kill.
Mm-hmm. And this is like when shamat came into Arabic, then into English as checkmate, that mat was mistranslated so that it meant the king died. I mean, I'm really glad you brought up the French because this is where we got the rest of the words that are related to check. The English name of the game was adopted from the old French échec, meaning a chessman or chessmen, plural of échec, which was the name of the game itself, which came by way of Latin, and then, you know, the Persian Shah or king. The original name of the game was like chaturanga or something like that in Sanskrit, by the way. But the word échiquier was the old French for check in chess, which was adopted into English as exchequer, originally a word for a chessboard, but also used in accounting.
Yeah, we still have the Chancellor of the Exchequer. That's the name of the finance minister in the UK.
Yep, and exchequer and the word check, or check as in the slip of paper you move money around with, eventually came to be associated with finance and government, because in Norman England, people did their accounting on a cloth divided into squares like a chessboard. It's amazing that all of this is so connected.
We should get on to checkers then, I guess, in a second. But let's just stick with chess a little bit more, because there's plenty more interesting etymology surrounding this game, isn't there? I didn't know what a pawn was, I had to admit. I know what the piece is, but I didn't know where the word pawn came from, why these little pieces are called that. Do you know?
I would assume because they're like pawns, in figuratively speaking, are like people who you move around, or people who... Yeah, no, tell me. I'm guessing.
It comes from a French word that means a pledge or a security, right? So they are kind of your security.
Like a pawn shop.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. There you go. It's something that you've hit on it. That's where that link comes from. No, that's not the thing that I was getting all excited about. So here in Germany, if you buy a bottle of drink, you have to pay a little bit extra for the bottle that it comes in. You then, when you finish your drink, take that bottle back to a shop and they give you the money back. It's a deposit scheme. And that deposit scheme is called Pfand. And that has exactly the same root as the word pawn.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. And it's called a pant, I notice, on my Scandinavian craft beer cans as well, which comes from the same place too.
So why are the chess pieces named after that?
I can only assume it's because they are providing a security as a line of defense. That seems to make sense to me. If anyone knows better, do let us know, because there are a lot of people who do know an awful lot about chess. But there are a few curious piece names, aren't there? I mean, Rook is a really weird name. Rook for it's clearly a castle.
Right.
Have you ever pondered why it's called a rook?
I would assume it would be like implying like a crow's nest. It's sort of on a ship where it's like a high place to look out at danger, etc.
That is an excellent thought, but it's absolutely nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Oh, interesting.
It's totally, totally mind-blowing where it actually comes from. So it goes all the way back to a Sanskrit word, which was ratha, which means a chariot. And we have this word because an Indian form of the game of chess used chariots instead of castles, but we've just ended up using their word. Isn't that amazing?
Huh. I think chariot actually makes more sense for the way that the piece moves. You would think your castle wouldn't move very far.
Yeah, I would say one of the key points about a castle is that it's immovable.
Right.
Yeah, it's steadfastness.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a chariot tends to, like with the wheels and whatnot, tends to move straight ahead.
The movement of the pieces has also given rise to some quite entertaining names in other languages. Like the German name for the knight is the Springer.
Ooh.
Which you can work out it's a Springer. It's a jumper, but not like the jumper I'm wearing.
I like that. That's interesting.
Some other interesting foreign names for the pieces. In Spanish, you can call the queen La Dama, which is the dame.
Mm-hmm.
the lady.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the knight is called El Caballo, which is the horse, rather than, you know, El Caballero,
yeah,
which you might think would be the translation. But they're right. There is only a horse there, as far as I can see.
It does look very, very like a horse, depending on your set. You can always... There are more and less elaborate sets, of course.
Indeed. Any more on chess, Jess?
I don't think so. Not from my end.
So let's get on to checkers then, because I don't call it checkers. I call it drafts.
Really?
We call it drafts in the UK.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's got a different name. We don't call it checkers.
Oh, okay. Well, now that we know like about the exchequer board, checkers makes a lot of sense. So where does your name come from?
Well, to draft is from the verb to draw, right? It is to move. So we just named it after the fact that you shift these pieces around the board. And you guys have named it after the board.
Fair enough.
It's not the only game with a variation between the UK and the US, by the way, because there's a game that's very popular in Britain, or has been since the 1940s, called Cluedo.
Yes, and we call it Clue.
You do. So I think ours is like a clever sort of portmanteau between the word clue and Ludo, which means I play, I think, in Latin. But it was originally called Cluedo. The guy that invented it was a Brit, and he invented it. Well, he patented it in the 1940s. He's actually a musician who used to play on cruise ships and in hotels where they would hold murder mysteries. And so he's supposedly been a little bit inspired by that. He was also inspired by a parlor game called Murder.
Amazing. I love that game.
Used to play to while away the evenings.
All of those games were inspired by like the popularity of Agatha Christie novels and similar fiction as well.
All right. When was Agatha Christie writing?
She started publishing in the 1920s. And this is also around the time when mystery novels were starting to become very popular in general.
I see. In between the wars, people finding stuff to occupy themselves with. Not enough death, apparently.
Did you know that the names used to be slightly different?
Are they the same in the US version as in the British version?
So the US edition has Mrs. White, Mr. Green, Mrs. Peacock, Professor Plum, Miss Scarlet, and Colonel Mustard.
Okay, and the British one has Dr. Black, Miss Scarlet, Colonel Mustard, Mrs. White, Reverend Green, Mrs. Peacock, and Professor Plum.
Interesting. So let's see. There was also originally Mr. Brown, Mr. Gold, Miss Gray, and Mrs. Silver. And the characters of Nurse White and Colonel Yellow became Mrs. White and Colonel Mustard.
Colonel Mustard's a really good name. That's a much better name.
You've seen the film, of course, right?
I haven't seen the film.
Oh my God, you must. It's one of my favorite comedies of all time. It's fantastic.
Really? It's actually good.
It is. It is one of my favorite movies of all time.
So what's the film called? Is it called Clue?
Called Clue, yeah. You've got to watch it. It's so good.
I should have called it Cluedo. I wonder why Hasbro, I think it's Hasbro that bought it, decided not to keep the original name.
I wonder. It could just be because Americans don't remember what Ludo is.
Yeah, of course. Because I mentioned like the etymology of Ludo, but Ludo is a game in itself.
Yeah, there are a number of older variations on this game that didn't involve murder mysteries. Like Parcheesi is more or less the same game too.
I don't know that one. What's that one?
Parcheesi is an Americanified adaptation of the Indian cross and circle board game Parcheesi, which in Hindi means something like 25, which was the highest throw of the dice in the game. And really, like, it doesn't have a lot in common with modern Clue, but if you look at the layout of the board, it looks pretty similar. The game now known as Ludo was originally Parcheesi.
I see. Okay. The game I actually played as a kid a lot was called Frustration, and that was basically Ludo, except they had a dice in the middle. Ad dice? No, it's die that is the singular. Yes, and there was a die in the middle.
Is the singular. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you would pop this little sort of plastic transparent dome on top of it and make this really satisfying clop, clop. That's not a very good impression of it. And anyway, it's called Frustration because, you know, you would be on your way around and then someone would catch you up and you'd have to go back to the start. But I really like that. Would you say that differently in the States? Would you say frustration?
It's called Trouble here.
Oh,
and there's
okay.
there was a cute little jingle in the 90s to go with it. I'm not going to sing it, but you can look it up.
Well, that's very frustrating. Any more board games?
Yeah, let's hit Monopoly.
This one
has a scandalous history and oddly, like, a little bit ironic.
Okay, I'm fascinated to hear about this. I don't know about the backstory. I obviously know that the word monopoly. Once you know the etymology, that's quite hard to say monopoly, probably.
Monopoly.
Monopoly is just comes from one and many, right? Because of the idea of one person taking ownership of as much as possible, I suppose.
The word monopole is also a word that exists in a couple of contexts. Like in the 1500s, it was a word for like something that was exclusively owned by a vineyard, like a particular champagne from a particular vineyard that couldn't be created elsewhere or named that. And then much like champagne too, but more specific. And then in physics, it's also a term for like an electromagnetic field, like a single pole, but that's not related.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. Anyway, the unfortunate thing about the game of Monopoly, though, is how it was stolen from its anti-monopolist creator. Elizabeth J. McGee Phillips, or Lizzie McGee. I could be mispronouncing her last name. It's M-A-G-I-E, but I think that's pronounced McGee. She was a game designer and a writer and a feminist and a progressivist who particularly followed like Henry George's reformist tax anti-monopoly principles. She created the Landlord's Game. And if you look at an image of the board that she created, it looks exactly like Monopoly does now, with like slight design changes. And the idea was to illustrate, it was an educational tool to illustrate George's single tax theory and the negatives of monopolizing and privatizing land. And you could play it two ways. You could play the anti-monopolist way, in which everyone is rewarded when wealth is created, and that was called prosperity. And then you could play the monopolist way, which was to create monopolies and crush opponents, and that was called Monopoly. It's very similar to now. Then some guy, not just some guy, he's well known, but Charles Darrow played the game, took the rules, copied it, started selling it as Monopoly, and said he invented it in his basement, which he did not, because we have accounts of him like having a dinner party, playing Lizzie's game, and then asking for the instructions.
Yes, for the instructions, the audacity.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then Parker Brothers, they bought the copyright from Darrow. Lizzie was like, excuse me. So they bought her patent for $500, and she didn't get credit for it until after she died.
Unbelievable. It's just the same old story, isn't it?
Uh-huh. These things.
So another game invented by a woman, as if I can do another little sort of segue, is Jenga. Did you know this?
Yes.
Yeah, invented by Leslie Scott, who was, I suppose, British, but was born in West Africa. And so she named the game after the Swahili word for to build, which is kujenga. I don't know if I'm saying that perfectly, but that's where it comes from, the idea of building, because she was fluent in Swahili as well as English. So she, yeah, took inspiration to name Jenga. It's pretty cool.
That's really neat. Hmm. Another board game it's a pretty simple origin, but I like I had never considered the origin of the word backgammon. This is a really old game. In Mesopotamia, it was called tabula. It's like 5,000 years old. And it's apparently called like backgammon or back game because you send your opponent's pieces back to the start.
Right. So not got anything to do with gammon.
Should we, for our next one, scrabble around in the history of Scrabble?
Oh yeah, let's absolutely do that. And that is just where the name comes from, right? It's the idea of sort of scrabbling around in your head for words, or scrabbling around in the little bag for tiles. There's a lot of scrabbling going on.
Yeah, I do like that the like satisfying tactile sensation of playing with the tiles feels like I'm scrabbling.
Oh yeah, I'm incessantly sort of fiddling with this bag while other people are trying to come up with words. It's really bad. I've been looking into, actually for a video that I recently did, I was looking into the frequency of letters and how often we use them. And it's very, very relevant, obviously, to Scrabble, because that's how they came up with what points to award for each tile and how many of each letter to have. And I thought it was very interesting what I found when I was doing this other research was that the inventor of Morse code basically just pulled together a load of documents and then counted up how often each letter appeared. And it's a very, very similar story with the inventor of Scrabble, a fella called Alfred Moshe Butts. Great name. He invented it in 1938. And he is said to have just counted the number of instances of each letter on the front page of the New York Times that he had to hand, and then based the values of the letters off of that, which I think is kind of neat.
Do you know what he originally called it?
No.
He called it Lexico, which I actually like a lot.
That's better. That sounds like if we invented a game, it would be called that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Are you good at Scrabble? Like unusually good or better than your friends?
I am better than my friends, yeah, but not unusually good.
Interestingly, like everyone is always like, I bet you're excellent at Scrabble. And oddly, I am not. And I think it's because I will think of longer words, but I'll be relatively good at coming up with a word, but I'm bad at math. And I'm not like, I'm not great at like picking a word that has, I'm like, oh, I'm excited about this word because I like the word, not because it has the best point value.
You know, you also, you have to be kind of sneaky, and I can be quite sly as well. And you have to look for a way. It's not necessarily the longest word, right, that's going to win for you. It's how it links up with other ones. You know what they say about, I think a big complaint among Scrabble players, or I suppose sort of mid-range Scrabble players, is that the words chi and za, so XI and ZA, wide awareness that those words exist has basically ruined the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do you know what the highest scoring, okay, so there's two ways to approach this. What the actual highest scoring word that anyone has ever supposedly played at Scrabble was, and then you've also got that, you know, the highest scoring hypothetical situation. But can I surprise you with those facts?
You absolutely will, because I don't know this information.
Great. So firstly, let's look at the Guinness World Record. So they say that under the North American rules, governed by the official Scrabble Players Dictionary, the OSPD, the highest scoring single play was the word, you're going to like this, quixotry.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. A little Don Quixote on the board.
Exactly.
Beautiful.
That earned carpenter Michael Crester, an American, 365 points, a point for every day of the year. But a bigger scoring word, but not necessarily acceptable by the American rules, is how I understand this, because it's in the Book of Records, but it says the word kazique. Feasible, so kazeeks, sorry, with an S at the end. It's important to have that, which is a type of bird. It's the plural of a type of bird. It says here is feasible under the official Scrabble Words International rules. And that earned Karl Koschnau from Germany 392 points.
Wow. Excellent.
Not bad. But the highest scoring hypothetical situation would be to play the word oxyphenbutazone across all three triple word scores, crossing over also with the words opacifying, pre-qualified, brainwashing, ameliorative, and ejaculations. And that together would score you 1,780 points.
That sounds like far too much planning.
I'm looking at it now. Someone's kindly drawn up the board. It's a monster and it'll never happen.
Yeah, because there's too much entropy with the partner you're playing.
Yeah, well, exactly. And So, I'm just noticing an extra thing here that means that for it to work, you have to have the word pacifying and then you put an O in front of it. You have to have requalified and then you put a P in front of it. You have to have rainwashing, which is a word, and put the B in front of it, and then... Yeah, I hadn't noticed that extra problem with this, or I hadn't noticed that extra level of complexity with this. But anyway, there you go. Oxyphenbutazone. Try it.
Oh, yeah, a word that I just store in my head all the time.
I got it now.
No, I'm much better at traditional crosswords than I am at coming up with Scrabble words.
Any readers of my newsletter will know that I'm a huge fan of the cryptic crosswords, which are slightly different in Britain to in America. Yeah, I kind of struggle sometimes with the American cryptic clues in the crosswords, because they're not the same.
I've been playing them since I was like very small, so I play the New York Times crosswords like a sport. I can probably post my the link to my leaderboard on my Instagram if anybody wants to join my leaderboard and start playing the mini with me.
Oh, I'm well up for that. I'm going to join that. Oh, we should talk about Wordle then, shouldn't we? We should give Wordle a mention.
Oh,
we can't
sure,
talk
yeah,
about
why not?
Word games without Wordle. What's your starter word for Wordle?
I actually stopped playing Wordle a while ago. I got bored of it.
What?
I like Connections better.
Has everyone stopped playing Wordle?
I liked the entertainment of picking a word that just like spoke to me that day, and then occasionally that would be the actual answer. So I like to keep it a little... What's yours? What's your starter word?
The one that always comes out is just out of the end of my fingers is just stare, which I think is fairly solid, right? I think R, T, and S are going to be quite common, and then you've got A and E, which are the most commonly used vowels. But I was looking up, you know, what I should be playing for the sake of this podcast. And according to the Science Foundation of Ireland, the best start word is tails. Although Wordlebot, which is a thing that the New York Times have made now that is part of the game. You can see how you did against this artificial intelligence. And it reckons that the best word you can start with is slate, which is obviously an anagram of tails. So I guess you could also have stale, maybe.
The other thing about using tails is Wordle doesn't frequently use plurals, which means it decreases your likelihood of getting it in one.
That is a very good point. It doesn't, does it? That's why you should go with slate or steel, if you want to use those letters. That's if you're running a one seed strategy, as it's known, because you can also do a two seed strategy, which is where you basically give up your first two goes to try and narrow down the field. And according to the Science Foundation of Ireland, you should start with cones and then put in trial. And between those, you should get a good idea of what word you're heading for.
I do like that, like we talked about earlier, it has that L-E ending on it, which implies like frequently wording.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm. Yes, I do like that.
I don't know if that's intentional.
Because it's a very sort of modern formulation for a name, isn't it? I only noticed the other day that chuckle is another one of those with that entertaining suffix. To chuck is like to breathe sort of suddenly and sharply. So to chuckle is to do it a lot. I like that.
One of those nice imitative words. I love that. And then, of course, there's the portmanteau Lewis Carroll variation, chortle, which is a combination of chuckle and snort.
Yes, we went into that in our portmanteau episode. A very good episode that's well worth a listen or watch if you haven't already seen or heard it.
Let's do some like physical like party games, the things you might play at a gathering. For example, the limbo.
Oh, yeah.
Have you played the limbo? I'm terrible at the limbo. I'm not very flexible.
No, I mean, I just dreadful at it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it bending forward, let alone bending backwards. Forget it. So where does the word come from? I mean, it sounds Caribbean to me, or...
You're correct. It was invented in Tobago. There are two theories about it. One is that it could be, and the one that's actually thought to be probably incorrect, is that it's, you know, the border of hell, as in limbo. And the idea being that you have to bend so low that you're at risk of toppling backward into hell. But that's probably unlikely because in several languages or like Creole languages spoken in that region, the word limber is limba or limbo. So it probably just is a variation on the word limber.
Oh, okay. So it's just like a fun ending on the word limber. like Wordle.
Let's see. Another one. Have you ever played cornhole and or what do you call it?
I beg your pardon? I have absolutely no idea what you are talking about. It doesn't sound like the sort of game that I want to play at family gatherings. I'll tell you that.
It's basically a beanbag toss. That didn't go on. Help.
That's not helping. That's not helping. They're throwing tossing into the mix does not make it sound any better. Go on.
Have you oh, dear. Have go you on. Called it maybe coits?
Coitus?
No. There's no version for this game that will help.
Oh, my God. I've gone double red. I've gone Miss Scarlet. Tell me about it anyway. Someone listening or watching would have heard of these depraved games of yours.
You throw a bean bag or like a little like bag full of corn kernels at a board with a hole in it, and your partner does the same, and you try to get it in the hole. And
okay, I think I might have played that. Go on. Tell me where it gets its name from.
It was originally called Parlor Quoits, Quoits, which is apparent, like this dates back to, I mean, everyone's been throwing beanbags into at boards with holes in them since like the ancient Greeks. And it's also like a variation on like throwing a horseshoe at a thing for the game of horseshoes. But I mean, cornhole is basically because the bags were full of corn.
Okay. Is that it? You're throwing corn down a hole.
Well, I was going to go into like quoits a little bit more. But
tell us about some more physical games and parlor games.
All right. I think we may have done this in one of our episodes on word myths, but the game of tag is often said to be an acronym. It is not. The word as a name for a game predates any attempts to make it stand for touch and go. And in fact, there are like variations that are like TIG and tap and tech and tick. And it's all just like, it's a word for like tapping someone essentially.
What was it called at your school?
Tag.
Okay. It was called tick a nick at mine.
Oh, well, there you go. But apparently that's very Middle English, because the game, like, tick or tech was...
Yeah, and tick a nick is a corruption of tick and it, right? So you are it.
You tick the person and you're it. Interesting. Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. So we called it tick a nick. We had tick glue pot, whereas if someone caught you, you had to go and stand in a glue pot, which was just a circle on the floor.
Huh. A glue pot. I guess because you're stuck to the ground. I see.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then someone had to come and free you. It was ever such fun. Wild away hours.
Do you know who, by the way, the Simon in Simon Says is? Do you call it Simon Says?
Yeah, we call it Simon okay. Says. Yeah, we do. Simple Simon Says.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds worse than what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't do what anyone called Simple Simon tells you to do, would be my advice. But who's Simon then?
Well, it's Simon Peter, apparently, for having, for the most part, done what Jesus said as a follower or disciple.
Oh, I see. I see. So he's gone from being compliant to issuing orders.
That could also be a retroactive application. Like, the Simon could have existed prior and the church decided it was okay to play. So, like, church sanctioned fun included Simon Peter Says.
You know, an interesting person's name that we didn't pick up when we were talking about cards, actually, is Jack.
Right? Oh, yes.
Because we talked about in our Halloween episode, where we talked about the jack-o'-lantern and Jack just being a kind of generic name. And the Jack, the card, was originally called the Knave, but, you know, the K was already taken by the king. So they changed it to Jack. And a Jack is just like an everyman, you know, a generic person, you know, in this case, sort of a servant of the king or queen. But it just kind of represents the man in the street. It is the man on the street, not the woman.
Simon Says in different languages is kind of fun.
Hold on. Let me try and remember. Okay, I'm going to try and remember the French one here. Oh, I know the French one. It's Jacques a dit.
That's right. Jack said.
Yeah.
Or Jean dit sometimes. Ah, Jean okay. says.
Yeah, there's a song called Jacques a dit that I know. And that's what made me think of it.
Let's see. In Afrikaans, it's Colonel Bevel, the Colonel commands. In Arabic, it translates to like Salman says. In Basque, it's the leader says. In Bengali, also like leader or teacher.
This does all rather detract from the idea that it's from Simon Peter, doesn't it?
Well, apparently, like the degree to which or the point at which these were adopted into different languages.
Yeah.
You know.
I suppose how each language decided to name it.
Right. I don't think that English speakers invented this game. So it seems that there's a ship captain in Japanese giving orders, teachers and kings across various languages. Sometimes it says, like, in Spanish, it's apparently mando mando or I command.
Oh, okay, very good. So it's all about the self, which makes far more sense, doesn't it?
Though the degree to which that one is used, I'm not sure.
Well, Rob says we've perhaps reached the end of this episode of Words Unraveled. What do you reckon?
I think we can do that. I think we could wrap it up. I would love, perhaps in a future episode, to dig in further with puzzles, since we touched on that.
We absolutely should go into puzzles, riddles, and such, for sure.
And charades. That's a nice connection, but a charade was originally a riddle, so we'll have to touch on that in the riddle
okay.
episode.
Okay, I thought that was maybe going to come up when we talked about parlor games, but let's save it up.
Well, the lovely thing about discussing the etymology of games is there are no winners or losers, or rather, we are all winners in the game of word origins. So join us on another episode of Words Unraveled.
Cheerio.